Hello and welcome to Pop a la Carte number 123. This week it's more just updates on what we're watching at home because no one's going anywhere. And it's all about television, right? I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
I'm Camille.
And I'm going to start with the Jared Leto because let's just start on the bitching phase. Why? Why, God, why? That's mostly what I had to have to say about that.
Because yeah, that's really, definitely not a good
thing. Same.
And I really want to point out that we cannot call this the Snyder Cut because it is not the Snyder Cut of the original movie. He is refilming this movie in large parts to make it more coherent. This is, you know, they basically had what, like a full planet-wide screen test of the movie, and now they get to go back and redo it and fix the thing. So instead of just a small theater worth of people that got to go in and watch it, you get the entire world telling you that your movie's shit and he's refilming. And, you know, it's going to be, what, at least 4 hours, right? I think that's what we...
Yeah, it's like a mini-series. Yeah.
It's a mini-series.
Yeah. And for some reason... And for some reason, we're bringing Jared Leto back. Because reasons.
Who everyone agreed was like the worst part of Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Which, I mean, I will admit I haven't seen Suicide Squad. Did I just say that right? I don't even know.
Yeah, you admit you have not seen Suicide Squad. Yeah. But no, he was terrible. He definitely brought the movie down.
But everything I've heard is the entire movie is terrible. So, and he's the worst part. That tells you a lot. But yeah, I just, why? I didn't really want to see this, you know, I saw the theatrical release and thought it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, which wasn't hard considering I thought it was going to be a big pile of trash.
Right.
And it was a big pile of trash, but there were moments that were okay.
And as much as, okay.
And as much as, you know, Joss is problematic now, you could tell it was, I do like his writing, and it was pretty much things that he put in that I could tell were what I liked for the most part, although some of them were probably things that I didn't like were his too, so he does have those as well. But the only thing I'm trying to think is, Watchmen the only thing I've seen by Zack Snyder besides Man
have
of Steel?
Have you seen Sucker Punch?
No, I haven't. Mm. Oh, wait, 300 is his, right?
Oh, yeah, 300 is yeah. His, yeah.
300, yeah.
Like, once.
300 was
I
fun.
Never needed to watch it again, but it was okay once. I like Watchmen, but I really just don't need to see. I like Watchmen except for the way longer than it needed to be sex scene.
Of movies that we have mentioned here, the one I either have not seen or literally cannot remember, like, it just, is Watchmen. I just don't. There's nothing. Nothing really when I think of his Watchmen. So I don't know if I saw it or not. But I have seen all his other ones, yeah.
Man of Steel, I cannot watch again. I've tried several times and I absolutely cannot watch it again. It was so bad.
And yet, I think it was superior to Dawn of Justice, Batman versus Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have not seen that because I have been told not to see it. Yeah.
I've seen it.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep saying, and I've probably said this on the podcast before, that I will watch it if we get to MST3K it.
And oh, yeah.
We've just never done it, so that's the only way I'm going to watch that.
That would be fun. Yeah.
So basically what I'm saying is I didn't want to see this extended version in the first place, and now you made me want to see it even less. I didn't think that was possible. So good job on that. I don't know. Like, is that a good thing? I don't know. It's so bad. Anyway, we'll move to things I do want to see in the superhero realm. Actually, before we leave DC, I saw that picture from Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad, the James Gunn one. I still would probably have absolutely zero interest in that movie if it weren't for the fact that it's James Gunn, and I want to support him after everything that happened. But what's his face? The 11th Doctor looks funny. Capaldi.
Matt Smith.
No. Sorry, 12th. What number are we on?
Capaldi.
Capaldi.
Yeah. He looks funny in it.
I like
whatever's going on with his head. It just looks
funny. Wow.
But that's all I got from, I mean, it's just a picture. We don't really, even that teaser, whatever, that they released during that DC thing they did, wasn't really much of a teaser. It was just an introduction to characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, overall, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun time. And I'm sure, like, I don't know. I can't imagine James Gunn would put out something as uncooked as other DC people have put out. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. Of the DC movies coming, I guess I want to see Wonder Woman, but that would be the next one that I'm actually interested in seeing. I didn't really like Shazam, was okay, but I'm not really excited about the next one. I still don't think the Flash is ever happening, and I didn't like Aquaman, man, at all.
Flash is a myth, that's true.
It's not happening. Anyway, moving to the other realm of the superheroes that we do know I like. Someday there will be another MCU thing. It's
someday.
Funny. I had to have an argument with somebody over how long it will be if Black Widow comes out of May since the last MCU thing. Like, they weren't understanding. And I was like, no, the last thing was Spider-Man. That was in July. That means it's almost 2 years. If we get it in May, I don't think we're going to. If we're lucky, we'll get it in July. Maybe. That one might be. I heard Dr. Fauci on NPR recently, and he was talking about that he said we'll probably have we'll know if we have the vaccine by the end of the year. It'll be widely available by April, but it's only going to be 70% effective, and 40% of people say they're not going to take it. So the earliest we go back to normal is the end of 2021.
Oh, wow.
That's what he said. The earliest is the end of next year. So people just wear a mask and get the damn vaccine.
Yeah.
So that we can actually go back normal any earlier. So that's why I'm like, I don't know if the movie will be out in even July. It'd be nice, because then that would be a MCU for my birthday, but we'll see.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, but at least we'll have WandaVision on our TVs in the meantime.
Do we know when it's coming out, though?
December. I think it's just December, right? I don't think we know exactly when.
Is it still? I don't
remember. That's what I heard. That's what like when the teaser came out, which looked really good, by the way. I really enjoyed that teaser.
Yeah.
It did say December then. So hopefully that's the case.
So then they're moving.
If we're talking Marvel, what about Hellstrom?
Hellstrom, there's been press junkets for already. So I guess that already came out. Didn't Hellstrom come out?
It came out.
It came out. I haven't seen anything good written about it so far.
I literally posted on my Facebook saying, guys, I'm trying to decide if we should watch Hellstrom or not. Does anybody have any thoughts on it? And not a single person responded. I don't know anyone.
Really?
Who it.
Yeah. I feel like people just don't know it exists in the world. I think that might be the might be the
Matt
issue.
Said he saw a commercial for it on the TV, on just regular TV the other day, and they don't really mention it's a Marvel thing at all.
I've seen the trailer. It doesn't feel like a Marvel thing at all also. And the few reviews I've seen written about it are not enthusiastic at all. So I think I'm going to pass.
It's the last not Marvel Studios thing. It's going to get, it's not going to have any, there's not going to be any more.
Right. This is just like a one-off. They just put it out there.
Oh my god, did you guys watch the trailer for the MODOK?
No.
Oh my god. Is it done by the same people who did Robot Chicken? Because it looks like Robot Chicken.
I think so.
And we watched, and it's like a clip of it, Matt and I just looked at each other and we're like, what the fuck was that?
Oh, no.
It was not good. I wanted to support it because Patton Oswalt's doing the voice, but I'm like, this is terrible. I don't want to watch this. Yeah. Speaking of Hulu things. So there you go. Those are the only two things that are not Marvel Studios that are still out there, I think. Because I think even the animation stuff has been taken over, hasn't it? Right. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But, so if WandaVision's coming out in December, that would mean they actually flipped it and it's coming out before The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which was supposed to be the next thing after Black Widow. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally, like, lost. So, because they only just finished filming the pickups that they needed to do for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Supposedly. And Matt was telling me last night, I don't know, I missed who it was that said it, but somebody, oh, he's walking by, so I thought he was going to come in and tell me, but anyway, but what's it called? Somebody involved said that there would be characters from early MCU appearing in it that we don't know about. And we were trying to figure out who.
Yes, I remember seeing that, yeah.
Who could possibly be. Like, who would fit into the Falcon and the Winter Soldier that's still alive?
Mm-hmm.
You said Betty.
Yeah. Betty Ross and her dad.
Well, why not? I think we know William Hurt is in Black Widow. Mm-hmm. And he would make, I mean, obviously he's got to be in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Do we know for sure? It is really a mouthful to say that over and over again. But
right? Falcon and, or just and whatever, Bucky and the Adventures of Bucky and Sam.
I like that better. By the way, I ordered Loungefly, have finally released a Winter Soldier backpack. I am so excited to get that.
That is exciting.
Backpack and purse, or backpack and wallet. I'm so excited to get
that. That is perfect for you.
Shameless plug, because I love Loungefly. Anyway, but yeah, William Hurt obviously makes the most sense. He's got to be in it. And I think we know he's in it. Mm-hmm. And if not, we assume he's in it. But who else would work? Matt was, you know, early MCU, it feels like it needs to be anything before what, Avengers, right? For the first one. I guess Kobe Smulders would kind of fit. Like, she would make sense. But, you know. I guess it depends on if you're going to do any kind of flashbacks or not. Like, are they going to be dealing with... I saw something today, like a story talking about they've explained how Hydra actually turned Bucky from Bucky to the Winter Soldier. Mm. And it's like, is that a thing that we need to... I mean, to understand more than we already do?
Right, do we care? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
We kind of already got that information.
Yeah.
Or at least enough that we should know. But that just made me wonder if there would be flashbacks. Because then you could have a lot more characters if you're actually flashing back. You could have people that are technically dead. You know, you could put Zola. I didn't think about him. You could have Zola. You could have like all kinds of characters that would make sense in the series if you're flashing back. I don't know who would work for Sam, though. Unless you get somebody who was involved in the stories, but Sam didn't realize that they were. Because, I mean, until he met Cap, I don't think he was really in the superhero realm at all. So he shouldn't know anybody. But you never know. Maybe he was walking down a hall with Rumlow and had no idea. I don't know.
Maybe.
But that's pretty much all we got, because... Oh, there was the terrible rumor that everybody knew was not true that Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire were going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. Although, I would have taken that over the fact that we have confirmed that Jamie Foxx is going to be in the next Spider-Man movie.
For some reason.
Why?
Yeah, as the same character too, right? Yes. Which is so, why? Yeah, we don't want this in our lives.
Yeah. Is it actually confirmed that Doctor Strange is going to be in it? Because that would make sense then.
I think it's confirmed that he's going to be like a mentor.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I guess that's how you you do the multiverse thing, because they're obviously leaning heavily into the multiverse coming in the future.
Right.
But I guess that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where people decided to make up the story that Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were going to be in it, which Sony literally came out and said, no, they're not. Or, which makes me think they really aren't. It feels weird that they came out and said that, but I don't know. Otherwise, I think that's all we got. This is the problem with nothing being able to really be made.
Right, and exactly.
Even if they make stuff right now, I guess they could just keep banking stuff. I did see something that Natalie Portman confirmed. She's Jane will wield Mjolnir, and I was like, I thought that we got that basically from when she was announced.
Yeah, exactly. She came out with like Mjolnir or whatever. She,
so. Like they, what's it called? No, Taika got down on his knee and handed it to her.
To offer it, like, yeah. At Comic-Con.
I think that was the confirmation, guys.
Yeah, I was like, I think we know. I think we
know. It's not news, really. So
this is how
desperate everybody's getting.
Yeah,
that's how desperate everybody's getting for news. Because they're like, wait, can we get you to confirm, like, the thing we already know is confirmed?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they made a news thing about the Tony nominations being announced at a later date. Like, just announce the nominations. Don't make a news report about the nominations going to be announced. We're really, it really is thin on the ground. But anyway, we're grasping.
That's a random aside, but we could say, so is it true that there's only one person nominated for Best Actor in a Musical?
Aaron Spite.
Yeah. Aaron's fight.
No, he's just going to win. So he's just him?
Well, technically, they say he still has to get 60% of the voters. But, like,
as opposed to no one?
Who's not going to vote for him at this point? That's just hurtful, man. Just that give it to so him, funny. Man.
I don't know. Like,
why wouldn't you at this point? Yeah. I watched Moulin Rouge. He was pretty great. Moulin Rouge was great. It was fun. And I'm sad that it's the only musical I got to see.
I know. I'm like, do you have a bootleg? You need to be sharing that.
No. I went to New York last year.
Oh, you did?
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
I want the bootleg. Bring it to me.
So I saw it. So I said, you know, he deserves it. It's fine. Yeah. So I hope he doesn't lose on a technicality. I don't think the world is that cruel.
No, I'm sure they'll give it to him.
That would be the worst 2020 joke.
That reminds me about Rebecca, though. I forgot that that's something that I want to talk about, Rebecca. But, maybe I'll just say it now. I'll just say, Aaron Spett, because, you know, I've seen so many young, up-and-coming actors when I was a Gossip Girl fan, because everyone who was in New York was on Gossip Girl, right?
Yes, right.
In that time period of men who dated Serena, men who had to suck chemistry out of Blake Lively were Aaron Tveit, Armie Hammer, and Sebastian Stan. Of those three, obviously Sebastian Stan is doing the best. Very happy and proud of him. And from the start, he literally elevated Blake Lively's performance on Gossip Girl, so he deserves everything he gets. Okay. Then Aaron Tveit was also really great. His character was a piece of shit, but he was so great at being that piece of shit. And then we have Armie Hammer. I don't understand. Can I just say, I think Armie Hammer, I don't understand why we're here with Armie Hammer. I saw the new Rebecca, and it was because I was transcribing interviews with him and with the other cast members. And then I was like, this sounds really interesting, because I've never seen Rebecca. I've never read Rebecca. So then I watched the original, not really original, but, you know, the Hitchcock Rebecca.
The Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to the Rebecca audiobook, and then I watched Rebecca, the new one on Netflix. And Armie Hammer, why is he where he is? I feel like he is like a walking chemistry, charisma, like suck. Like, he's like, succubus of it, but not like, it doesn't come out. He doesn't take it and then bring it out. It just goes into a black hole somewhere, nowhere.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
And then he's going to be on like Death on the Nile, right? The new Kenneth Branagh's Hercule Poirot adaptation. Yes. And he's, his character there, because I read the book, it's like, why him? Because he's supposed to be like a really charming, debonair, like seductive guy.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And that's also
same with Rebecca, right?
Exactly. And the director of Rebecca even said he cast Armie Hammer because he's so good looking that you believe any woman could fall for him. And I was like, well, what about the rest of it? Because
He is a walking Ken doll. He is literally a walking Ken doll.
That is a perfect way of describing him.
I'll admit, I do find Armie Hammer ridiculously attractive, but I do agree that he's not the best actor.
He should be on a poster, right?
Right. Exactly.
And then somebody else.
See him on a poster.
Put him on the poster, make it seem like he's really huge, and then just have him walk by in the background.
Yeah. That's, the moral of the story is Aaron Tveit deserves this Best Actor award, and give it to him, or I will riot in front of your house with pitchforks. Okay.
He moved those hips in Moulin Rouge. He was dancing. He moved those hips for that alone. He deserves it. I mean, he didn't even get a Tony for Next to Normal or Catch Me If You Can.
But he was so good in that. That was such
exactly.
a good role.
So give it to him for Moulin Rouge. He deserves it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Come on, Tony. There's only one nomination. Just give it to him. It's just so sad. It's bad enough that they only had like three musicals nominated this year and they left out The Lightning Thief, but whatever.
Bad.
Just give it to Aaron. He deserves it.
So is it just because there were like nothing got to open because everything like the year just went to hell so early?
Yeah.
Is that why that there's so little?
Yeah. Several were.
It's definitely a bit of a. There's got to be. It's more of a snub than usual, right? Because it's like if you opened and you don't get nominated, it's because they're saying you fucked.
I know. That's what.
Because I know a lot of people were really pissed off about The Lightning Thief, and it's like there's literally nothing else opened. Why didn't you just give it a nomination?
I don't even know. I don't even know the justification for
that. That's literally the. If I wouldn't be with you, even if you were the last man in the universe.
That is
no Tony nomination for you.
It's so weird. I don't know.
It's so sad.
But I saw and I was like, wait, he's the only one nominated? What happened? And it was like 2020. That's what happened, Valerie. 2020. But maybe when are the awards actually handed out? It's not until after the first of the year, actually, is it?
They haven't said.
Oh.
They haven't said, honestly. They said the awards will be handed out at one point.
Oh, okay.
No
so
dates.
It could still end up being a horrible thing where they're like, we have no best actor this year because you suck. Because we're just going to be mean.
Yeah. I mean, the Olivia Awards are up like in a few hours. So let's see what. But I didn't get to see anything in the West End. So we'll see, I guess. And then we have all these, again, since we're talking a little bit about musicals, a little quick segue that there are lots of musicals being adapted for film on Netflix. Now, so I saw the trailer for The Prom, which looks like a lot of fun. It looks like a lot of fun. And then there's a trailer for, well, The Prom's coming out on Netflix early December. And then Netflix also has like a couple of Christmas musical films that are going to be fun. And then there's a West End musical called Everybody's Talking About Jamie, which has a film which is coming out next year, February, I think. So anyway, sorry, random segue into musicals, at least being reincarnated into film for the next.
I love musicals, so we need more of it's weird.
The Prom looks like super fun, so.
Yeah. That's the one that Meryl Streep's in, yeah?
Yeah, Meryl Streep, James Corden, Andrew Randles, and Nicole Kidman as like four cynical Broadway stars who are coming to this small town to help a lesbian student go to the prom with her girlfriend. That's the premise.
That's cute. Mm-hmm. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I am all for that. And it sounds... Well, I was going to say lighthearted, except it's not. Obviously, that premise. It'll be a lighthearted telling of a story that's obviously sad because it shouldn't be that they need to come and try and convince people to let her go to the prom with her girlfriend.
Yeah.
But that's a good, it sounds like a fun story.
The songs in the trailer sound pretty catchy, so I said this is at least just going to be fun to watch and sing along to, which we need at this
this
time, right?
Please give me all the fun, happy things.
Yeah.
Not fun or happy, probably, really, except that it is on Netflix. There's new casting news for The Crown, right? Which I still haven't watched, by the way. I don't know how I haven't watched it. No.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. I kind of know the story.
Right. It's like, well, it's not really spoilers here.
No, it's because Matt wanted to watch it, so I wasn't watching it on my own. And except that our list is so long, I may just watch it on my own and be like, fuck it, you watch it on your own time.
Right.
But anyway.
Right. Sometimes you gotta do it. Sometimes.
So, middle of all the controversy right now, Dominic West is going to play Prince Charles.
Yeah. Prince Charles.
Oh, wow.
While he has his own scandal, right?
Yeah. Wait, what's his scandal? I don't even know.
Oh, you didn't hear about it? Yeah. So he and Lily James are filming something in Rome, and there were pictures taken of them kissing and canoodling.
Yep.
And
he's married.
He's married.
Who's he married to? I mean,
I don't know who she is.
Not
random.
Actor.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
I'm not an
actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they came out and said they're still happily married, and apparently Lily James is completely embarrassed. And they're still filming, I think, right? So it's not like they're done filming.
Well, I'm sure she would feel embarrassed by that, But so did they figure out what happened? Did anyone come out with an explanation of what happened?
No.
Wow. That's so weird.
And they may get in trouble too, because you're not allowed to have two people on a scooter right now in Italy, because Italy are being really strict, and they were on a scooter together. So now they may also be fined for being on a scooter together while COVID. It's just,
wow.
The embarrassment gets worse and worse.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah. And Lily James, what, 3 months ago you were having a scandal having out in the middle of a park with Chris Evans, and now Chris you're Evans. Like a dude like who's
so basically she just really playing, not, like
he's playing her father in the thing that they're filming.
What? So, he's playing her father?
Awkward.
Oh my god, that's so creepy. So you can't even like make up like, oh no, this was filming a scene. We were actually filming. You just didn't see the cameras. Nope. No, that's so
not awkward. Even.
This reminds me of that.
I love your reaction.
This reminds me of the scandal.
It's so
with,
gross.
I can't remember who it was. Justin Timberlake, right? And his co-star. And the scandal was like they held hands or something. Like they touched hands while they were out with friends. And then Justin would be like, "I'm so embarrassed. I embarrassed my son. I embarrassed my wife. I was drinking. Like there's nothing going on. Mm-hmm. I just got a little. My hand went too far to her hand." And I was like, "What is happening? Is this the Victorian era? What's going on?" And now you've got these people just making out in the street. That's crazy. Okay.
I'd say we, you know, we're starved for some kind of like gossip, except we always are. So it's not really different.
Right.
Yeah. Is that the only casting news, or because it's is it? It was well, going to end, and now it's they're doing another season, right?
No. Well, they're basically ending after 6 seasons. So the 4th season, which is coming out mid-November. It's going to be the last for the current batch, the current cast of Olivia Colman and Tobias Menzies and Josh O'Connor. And then, so with casting Dominic West, this is basically rounding off the cast, the last batch of royals for the last 2 seasons. Because we already have Imelda Staunton as Queen Elizabeth, Jonathan Pryce as Prince Philip, then Leslie Manville taking over from Helena Bonham Carter as Princess Margaret. And then recently, Elizabeth Debicki as Princess Diana. And then now, finally, Dominic West as Prince Charles. So those are like your main royals for the last 2 seasons. So that's the only like real significance of his casting, because that means the family is complete, basically. And let's see, the main royals. So, I mean, I found it interesting because, like, Dominic West and Josh O'Connor, who are both playing Prince Charles, both starred in the recent Les Misérables adaptation as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was Valjean and Josh was Marius. So, like, and that's interesting.
That's funny.
But, yeah, so.
It's because there's only, like, 5 actors in Britain, so they have to use them in everything.
Yeah. And Dominic West is in, like, a lot of American shows for some reason.
Including like, The Affair, Wire. Which is weird.
I finished The Affair, and anyway, like I found it weird that Ruth Wilson wasn't there for the last season, because it's obviously supposed to be the two of them, but then it became all about Dominic West's character.
Yeah, and didn't Ruth Wilson like kind of speak out about it being like attention and like, you know, like a toxic work environment for her? So
yeah.
That's not awkward.
They did her dirty. They did her character dirty as well on The Affair, honestly. So.
So don't watch that, okay?
Right?
I'll strike that off the list. Yeah, it's funny. I'm talking about all these things that I need to watch. Like, literally, you need to see our list. It's ridiculously long.
Never ending.
And instead, never ending. So Sundays is basically our day that we, like, sit and binge something. So we were trying to figure out what to binge. And then we were like, hey, The Mandalorian's come back. Let's watch it all again. Well, so instead of watching something new, we're just like, no, let's watch that thing again.
Good call, though.
I know, right? I mean, it is. At least it's, what, 4 hours to watch all of it?
Yeah.
Maybe about. 5 with a break or something. So, you know, that's not too bad. We just got our animatronic, the child, which, by the way, even Amazon, when Alexa told us that our package had arrived, she called she called it Baby Yoda, not the child. So
we don't know. Yeah, Baby Yoda is just the name. That is the name of
that's
the child.
The branding.
Exactly.
It'll be interesting to see when eventually we do get a name, if we all start calling him by that name.
No.
Because we know what the Mandalorian's called, and we just call him the Mandalorian.
Yeah. I don't even remember what the Mandalorian's name is. I know we learned
it. Jaren.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't remember that that happened. A lot of people are like, oh, no, we didn't learn it, right? I'm like, we did. Speaking of, remember those rumors that Pedro Pascal was, like, somehow not on the Mandalorian anymore?
Yes.
Where did that even come from? Because I just read
it. Discovered or somebody?
Yeah, someone. Because we got an interview with Pedro Pascal and Jon Favreau talking about the Mandalorian, like, season 3. And I was like, so I guess we can confirm that's not the case, right? Like,
right?
Can we remove this rumor? But anyway. That's all.
So weird.
News is thin on the ground.
Yes. What people do. So make it up.
Yeah.
But I don't think we watched the latest trailer for The Mandalorian because we're now like, we don't want any more spoilers. We just want to watch it.
Right.
So,
but it's really good. Well, the latest trailer as in like the sneak peek or the trailer? There was like a 1 minute sneak peek.
Whichever was the more recent.
Yeah.
We watched the first one or the older one. And then
so good.
Out. Yeah. So we're just excited. And that little animatronic Baby Yoda, by the way, totally worth it. He's fucking adorable. It wasn't supposed to come until like December, and we got it a week ago. So they got that production ramped up. It's so cute. We pre-ordered it like forever ago, so we got it way cheaper than, I think it was $30, and now it's like $60. But he's adorable, and I just can't wait to see it. And there was supposedly what's it called? Why am I blanking on his name? Ewan McGregor. Jesus Christ, I used to be a
I
blanked on his name. Anyway, was on the set at one point in full, like, Obi-Wan gear to kind of test out, because obviously they're going to use the same technology. But then everybody's like, wait, does that mean he's in The Mandalorian? I'm like, technically he could be. It's the right time period. It would be weird, though.
Just, like, add a few more gray hairs, I guess he could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he has aged since the prequel, so it kind of works, right?
They have access to the same aging technology that. No, I'm kidding. No, it is. It is afterwards, but you could get Ghost Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And we love those.
Why he would show up to the Mandalorian, I don't know, but they'll find a way. Just kidding. No,
people
don't.
People will still be on board for it.
Do that. Let's just. It was for the technology because they're going to be using it for the Obi-Wan show that actually nobody wants. Or no, everybody wants, but I don't know why because I don't. What the hell is that story going to be? Him like on a hill on Tatooine, just like with binoculars, watching baby Luke. Like I don't know what that story is going to be. Mm. It's weird.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, Disney, I guess, in general. Because we were going to mention Soul has been moved to Disney Plus. But now we have a trailer for Raya and the Last Dragon, which do we think it's actually going to come out in theaters? When is it supposed to come out?
That's a great question. When does Raya and the Last Dragon come out? I just watched the trailer, and yet I know 2021 is what I've seen. March 12th.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not paying attention to release dates much anymore for movies because I don't think they're gonna happen.
Exactly, it's scheduled to be theatrically released, but we don't know that that's gonna happen.
March 20th. Yeah.
Did you see AMC in the US are offering the option to, for $100, rent a movie theater, and they have a list of like movies. So you rent it for $100, you can have up to 20 people in the theater. Which, you know, isn't like, that's not bad if you had, you know, a bunch of your friends come and you were all socially distanced. That might not be so bad. I did actually look in LA though, and because our movie theaters are still closed, it's not an option in LA. But I know Corey, my friend who has been on the podcast before and will listen to this, was telling me for Tenet, I think it was, he went to a theater because Orange County, their theaters are open. And he said he was the only person in the theater. And when he walked out of the movie at like 9 something, he was the only person in the entire movie theater. And it made him sad in like the building.
That is sad. Wow.
Aww. It is kind of sad.
I mean, like, it's necessary, but also sad.
Yeah. Another friend, Claire, she was like trying, because she's in the UK and their movie theaters were open, I think. Now they're not because they've gone back into lockdown. But she was trying to encourage people to go see them, you know. No cases have been tracked back to the movie theaters. And it's like, that's great and all, but at the same time, it's still a luxury and it's a risk, no matter what you say. And as much as you want to support them, it's not worth it to risk my life. Like, the government should be helping the companies out if they're really in that bad of straits, not trying to convince people, hey, risk your life, go to a movie theater. Especially when there's nothing playing anyway, so... But that whole $100 thing, I was like, oh, that's not too bad. And the New Mutants was one of the options, and I haven't seen it yet. So, I don't know. Tempted, but probably still won't do it. Because it's scary. And, you know, who wants to... I don't want to die. I don't want to get sick either, even if it doesn't actually kill me. But I am in a bubble with my parents, and they would be at risk, so... It's just not worth it. Sad, but true. But how did Raya and the Last Dragon look? Because I haven't watched the trailer.
Really, really pretty. I mean, it's not like there's much like plot, at least in the trailer I saw. It was literally like, she's like, I'm Raya, I'm going to go fight the Last Dragon. And then fighting. But it was really good. And I didn't realize, like, because I just haven't been paying attention. But yeah, Kelly Marie Tran is Raya. And Awkwafina is the Last Dragon. So... I was like, that's really cool. Yeah, it looks really nice. And I like that they put from the creators of Moana first and Frozen. And I was like, I feel like you're trying to connect it to Moana. So, I like that.
Yeah, because, you know, Frozen was okay, but I still don't get, like, the hype.
Yeah.
That said,
I like how they gave it, like, a kind of an Avatar Last Airbender vibe, right? Because...
Mm-hmm.
She's not from a... I'm excited because she's the first Southeast Asian Disney princess. So, for me, that's super exciting. But
yeah,
it's like Moana, where they don't really say the exact country where she's from. She's like an amalgamation of all Southeast Asian cultures. Like, mm-hmm. I know that her two sticks, speaking as a Filipino, the two sticks that she's using are... part of like our native martial arts called Arnis. So that's exciting for me. But there's a lot of elements from different Southeast Asian cultures that they mishmash. And there's like a really quick scene where she's like, the peoples are, the different groups have been like divided in this new world or whatever. So I just want to see how they're going to portray this fusion of Southeast Asian cultures, which is going to be fun. And yeah, it looks pretty exciting, very Moana-ish, where she's not going to have a romance, and instead she's just going to go on a big adventure and be a warrior and be awesome. So,
right.
Looking forward to that.
I do appreciate that, because not everything has to be about romance, says the girl who loves watching romances, but still.
But yeah, I do feel like that's kind of been the trend more with Disney, Pixar-y, whatever, female-led films, even ones where... there is a romance, like we have, like going all the way back to Tangled and Princess and the Frog. Even though when there is a romance, the primary objective for them, right, is like, yeah, I have this objective of seeing the lights, or I have this objective of starting my own restaurant, you know, and like that's really where they're trying to go. And then we had, you know, Brave, where it's like, I explicitly don't want a man is my objective. 16, you know,
it's a good objective.
Right. And now we're coming with like Moana, with Frozen, and apparently with Raya, where there's not even a man. Well, Frozen actually did have one, but for Anna. But like, you know, Elsa. There's not even a man in question to get. So yeah.
Well, you know, maybe in March. It'll end up being on fucking Disney Plus. You know it's going to be. Like it
I mean, if Soul went to Disney Plus, I assume that either means they don't really care about how Soul does, or Mulan actually did do well enough on Disney Plus that they think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Did Mulan do well on Disney Plus though?
I don't know that they released the numbers.
We don't know. It doesn't sound like it.
Right. Like I don't think it did, but if they're continuing to do that for others, I'm like, was it enough? Or were you just like, I just don't care, I'm gonna release something?
Yeah, they need to make some money, especially because Disneyland is not opening anytime soon. And they're not allowed to release. I mean, they'll hold the really, really big movies, but yeah. There was a whole story about how they're restructuring part of the studio to make more content for Disney Plus. So obviously they think it's worth making content to drive more people to the streaming. But it is a case of what is worth moving to it. You know, Mulan was obviously something that was a bad idea. Although I think, honestly, with everything that went, you know, her comments about the Hong Kong protests, etc., didn't help that movie anyway. So it's hard to know how much of it was the pandemic and moving to Disney Plus, and how much of it was people being upset with the lead actress. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But speaking of streaming, just use that as a transition. Everything is streaming. It can all be a transition to another streaming thing, right? We just finished The Boys this week, which was funny because like I'd forgotten that it was only 8 episodes, and we were watching episode 7 and we were gonna stop, and then we were like, well, let's just do one more, and then halfway through that episode we're like, this is the finale. Like, this must be the finale. Anyway,
yeah,
I thought it was a really good season again.
Mm-hmm. If I had a criticism, I think that they had a lot that they wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
And only 8 episodes in which to say it. So some of the things that they were trying to say did not necessarily land. But I do think they had a really good mix of, you know, the like shock, gore thing that they're going for, and then actually like, hey, these are the issues that we are facing right now in 2020. So
So I
did like it. Stormfront, I think that the build-up to Stormfront also, like, was really, like, well done and, like, fascinating and creepy, and the actress was great. Mm-hmm. But then once they kind of paired her with Homelander, I was like...
Yeah, same. It was like, really? I mean, I guess it's, you know, by then also revealing the Nazi subplot, it was, look, he's her Aryan dream.
Right, but, like, person, he should have been from the like, start then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, nothing changed about him for him to hurt something like... Oh, the Aryan-ness is just oozing out of him.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, I would get it if she had seen Ryan, and then immediately Ryan was like, you know what? This is the perfect little, you know, Aryan baby that we can then brainwash, right? Superpowered alien baby that we can brainwash into being the next leader or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would have gotten. But anyway, I did. I really liked it. Sucks that Chantel has to go look for another job now. And remind everyone about Flash. That one time she could have stayed 2 episodes longer on Flash, but she didn't. So sad. So sad for her. But but I did really. I love Annie's development. And also Huey. I like season 1. I was like, oh, Huey's so annoying. And now I'm like, you know what? I really enjoy this. Like, Huey is the Pollyanna of the series, because it's the way it's set up. You would think that it's Annie, but instead they're like, Annie's getting more jaded and whatever, being more like Billy. And then Huey's like, let's all get along. So, yeah, that's cute.
Yeah. How do you feel about the AOC insert being, I guess, the next big villain? I was like, wow, okay, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting twist. Especially now that you know, literally said AOC insert. Like, oh my god, AOC's destroying us all. No. I thought it was interesting. I definitely am looking forward to finding out what her motivations are. And of course, Huey working for her is going to mean that we're in an interesting position to bring, you know, the gang back together for another round. Uh-huh. But I hope that there's like, I don't know. I don't know that you can have some nuance when you've exploded a bunch of people's heads. Maybe you can't. But I hope that we're going to see some nuance with whatever it is that she's going for, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I was like, okay. I mean, but I love AOC, so what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, wait, what does this mean? I guess you always have that little bit of, like, extremes on opposite sides kind of thing, yeah. Right? So maybe that's what they're going for? We'll see.
And I'm sure if AOC could, she would be perfectly happy to explode Mitch McConnell's head.
I mean, you know, yeah, right.
there is that part of the story. I don't know. Yeah, Matt was just at the end of it. He was like, "Wasn't Jared or Jensen Ackleson? Jensen Ackles?
Yes,
if I can get his name, that would
Jensen
help.
Ackles
supposed to be in it." And I was like, "No, it's next season. He's gonna be Soldier Boy, aka Captain America." I mean, obviously, which is funny because didn't he originally? Like, wasn't he one of the people wanted to be Captain America before we got Chris Evans?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he is a perfect choice. Yeah.
It'll be
funny, because it's like, it's one of those shows where it obviously was trying to tell me a lot. Uh-oh, we lost Camille. It was trying to say a lot, but at the same time, it's so, like, it's so crazy that you almost don't take a lot in from it because it's just also so over the top. Like, you're getting the information, but you know, it was enjoyable. We watched it over two nights, so that's always good. Obviously, we liked it. I think we were gonna go to Queen's Gambit next, so that is on you, Tatiana.
Oh, on me.
You're the only one who's watched that yet so far.
Yes. So I will say, I do recommend if you're interested in chess. If you're interested in women's lives in the 1950s, or if you're interested in just a general, you know, character study of a troubled genius, but focused on a woman instead of like another Sherlock or another Dr. House or whatever, Queen's Gambit is very good. I think it's also 8 episodes, maybe it's 9 episodes, I don't remember, but it's a mini series. So there's not going to be a second season, it's the full story. Mm-hmm. And Anya Taylor-Joy does a really good job. I don't know if I have previously been harsh on her because I don't like her face. But actually, I was harsh on her because of Emma, like, because I didn't like that adaptation of Emma. But
I still
She's super good in this. And she definitely has that kind of, like, arrogance and, like, off-kilter-ness. And yet she's still very likable. You know, like, you root for her. Because it's like, if she were a man, then she would just be like that and no one would even think it's weird. But since she's a woman, she's like that. People are like, oh, this is weird. But I remember her, you know? And there's a really interesting dynamic with her and her. So the story is her character, Beth, her mother dies in a car accident, which is later kind of like revealed through flashbacks and whatnot to have been much more sinister than just a car accident.
Okay.
And she goes to an orphanage that is kind of, like, you know, shitty. It's a shitty orphanage. But in the basement, the janitor or whatever, the caretaker of the orphanage, he's obsessed with chess. So he teaches her to play chess. And so from him, she learns the basics of chess and she becomes, like, really, really good at it. Because, like, all she does is just, like, read books about chess, the available ones there, and play it with him. But at the same time, they also, at this shitty orphanage, give the kids drugs, basically. They give them, like, a sedative and then, like, some other thing, basically to keep them in line. And so she gets addicted to the medicine there, basically. And so once they are no longer allowed to give them out, because, like, the law said you can't do that anymore, she starts, like, stealing them and whatever. She just becomes an addict. She gets adopted by Marielle Heller's character, who I did not realize was, like, a director in her own right. Like, she literally directed Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And, like, won an Oscar for some other thing that she directed. And I was like, what? Oh, my God. So her and her husband adopt Beth. But then the husband, like, immediately leaves her. And so now it's just this woman and the child that she adopted, which apparently in that time you can't keep the child if you're a single parent, like a single mother. So they just, like, pretend, like, she works out a deal with her husband that, like, they're just going to stay married on paper so that she can keep Beth. But anyway, she starts, like, sponsoring her to go on different tournaments and stuff in chess. So you could, that's when you really could start seeing her actually as, like, a chess player, professionally speaking. And then that's, like, how they end up making their living is from Beth playing chess. So yeah, which so it was really cool at that point. Like, the first couple episodes where she's in the orphanage, I was like, well, this is depressing and weird and also very slow. Like, I don't care about chess, so I don't know why I'm watching her learn chess. But once but once she gets adopted, it gets super interesting. And, like, the dynamic between the mom, the adoptive mom, and Beth is really, really interesting. And then her with, like, the different guys that she's, like, playing against. And how they treat her as a competitor versus as a woman. And then eventually, once her addiction gets, like, a little too hard to control, as someone who needs their help, is all very interesting. So yeah, in the end, I would highly recommend it. At first, I was like, get me out of here. And then by the end, I was like, more. So there you go.
Is it something that there, is it a contained series or is there?
Yeah, one? It's a contained series. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess, like, if you wanted to, you could be like, what happens next? But it was very much meant to be, like, it's based on a book, and it tells the whole book, and then, you know, like, after that, unless you want to make more problems for Beth, you should just leave it there.
Yeah, Matt was asking me about it the other day, and if I wanted to watch it, and I was like, I literally haven't heard anything about it, so I don't know. But I guess I'll tell him that, yes, we just have to add something else to our list.
Right. Oh, God. My only issue, if I'm going to say, like, give an issue other than I already told you the first couple of episodes, I was like, I don't care. My only other issue is that you could obviously very easily explore race and that time period as well. And there is one character who's in the orphanage with her, Jolene, who is Black. And so there's a little bit of that. And then, like, she comes back later on and she'll talk a little bit about her experience as opposed to Beth's. But otherwise they don't do it at all. So I was like, missed opportunity. But you know, not everything can do everything, so that's fine.
That's true. I get, it's one of those things where sometimes you do the one thing right, I guess, as opposed to all the stories and
right, exactly. Poorly. As opposed to, like, The Boys, where you're like, I'm gonna do all the things, and you're just gonna take what you pick up. It's fine.
We'll hope you get something out of it.
Exactly.
I think we're going to go to Camille and talk about the trial of the Chicago 7, all the streaming thing. Is there anything on Netflix or network television right now? Because I feel like all we're talking about is streaming. Supernatural is, but I'm not watching that until it's over. Anyway, but we've got the trial of the Chicago 7 that's on. Is that Netflix as well? Oh, did we lose Camille again?
I think it is Netflix. Camille, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. I switched to another stronger connection for my part. Sorry.
So yeah, I've heard, because they've been pushing it hard, they've been doing a lot of interviews for it, so every time I'm on NPR it feels like somebody's talking about the trial of the Chicago 7, but I haven't actually watched it.
Okay,
so what did you think?
So I watched the trial of the Chicago 7 last night, and so all my thoughts are still pretty fresh.
Okay.
I'm not American, so I wasn't really aware of this part of history before. So it was interesting to me. It was kind of fresh. So since I didn't know the historical context so much, I'll just focus on maybe the way the movie presented it. So it was written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, who did The Social Network, who did, like, The West Wing and The Newsroom. So it has all the typical Sorkin elements, like the quick fire dialogue, the characters, like, over intellectual characters being smart and clever with each other, which kind of works for this scenario because it is a trial of 7. Actually, there are 8 who were put in trial in the end, but the 8th person, which I'll talk about in a bit, isn't really part of the conspiracy, but he actually comes across as one of the most compelling characters in the whole thing. I was really impressed by the strong ensemble. I think whoever did the casting for this was pretty good, but also interesting because, like, a lot of the main cast, again, were British actors playing Americans. So you've got Eddie Redmayne. I've actually never really seen Eddie Redmayne play an American before, so it was interesting for me because when I think Eddie Redmayne, I'm like, Fantastic Beasts, I guess.
right?
Or Marius from Les Miserables, The Theory of Everything, even his weird ass character from Jupiter Ascending, the Witchery, like that guy. So, and or the Danish Girl. So Eddie Redmayne as an American student activist. Interesting. Then Sacha Baron Cohen, and I haven't even seen Borat too, but here
that's the other thing we're gonna talk about.
He was pretty great. And you know, pretty well cast as sort of hippie leader, where Eddie Redmayne was the uptight student leader, Sacha Baron Cohen was the fun hippie activist, and it worked well. And then a couple of others, but the other notable British actor was Mark Rylance as their lawyer. So again, like Mark Rylance, he's amazing in everything, but I really know him more from like Wolf Hall and theater, like all of theater, yeah. The theater work he's done. And he's great here again as an American lawyer. So the cast is super strong. And then you've got like Joseph Gordon-Levitt as one of the prosecutors. Cool, solid. Frank Langella as the judge, who's super, like, super problematic, but he brings that sort of gravitas to the role that makes you convinced that he is a judge, but you're also like super frustrated with him all the time because he does quite a lot of unjust things in the course of the film. And then Michael Keaton even has a really quick role as a former attorney general, and like Michael Keaton is just really having like a reconnaissance these days, right? Yeah. That's not, the first thing that comes to mind is like, what can I compare it to? It's the reconnaissance. So Michael Keaton, I don't know what you would call it, but that's what he's doing. So it's a really short role, but like he steals every scene he's in, so it's fine. So, well, it's a pretty long movie. It's more than 2 hours, and honestly, a couple of scenes I think run a little too long, or they get bogged down with this Sorkin style of too much dialogue and too much debating, and some of the characters come across more as like mouthpieces of Sorkin's own ideologies more than like people with real like human characteristics and feelings. But when it does, there are a couple of really strong moments which make the film just really so topical, so relevant, because it's about a trial of these student activists, like these different activist leaders. So some are students, some are hippies. There was one who John Carroll Lynch plays a civilian leader, like a Boy Scout trooper or whatever. But basically, because of the riots that happened in the 1968 Democratic Convention, mm-hmm. These people were put on trial as a sort of politically motivated, like theater, just so that they could put the blame on someone else for the riots, when there was actually strong evidence that it was the police who started the riots in the first place, which is like, this sounds familiar. Doesn't this sound relevant? Plus there was a whole subplot which was actually for me the most compelling with the eighth so-called co-conspirator who had not even met the seven, played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who was in Watchmen. And I think he just won an Emmy also.
Oh, so yeah.
He was the only black co-conspirator in the trial. And then he was treated, like, of course, the most appallingly. Like, where all the white guys, you know, get to go home during the course of trial, he was, of course, in prison. And he had no connection to them whatsoever. But like the most moving moment of the whole film, and I'm like, I can forget the whole film, but not this part, was a scene where he was literally bound and gagged just for speaking out. And you could see like all the characters were shocked. I was shocked. I said, I can't believe you actually do this to a black man in the 60s.
Yeah.
In the court, in front of everyone, you call yourself a civilization, and you would do this. And that scene was just like, whoa! I can forget everything else, but that scene, that sold the film for me. Still, it's crazy. And you can even like just in his eyes, you could already see like all the emotions just being conveyed in his eyes at that moment. And luckily, like, thankfully, his case was classified as a mistrial, and he was not convicted of anything, because of course he was completely innocent. But that was right. just really highlighted one of the themes, one of the recurring themes in American history, probably, of, you know, systemic racism and police brutality. And that's why it's so chilling. I don't know when they started production on this film, but like it coming out now, 2020, it's like a punch in the gut. It's like, I thought I switched off the news to watch a film for a little bit of escapism. I am not escaping into anything.
No.
Instead, there's I'm just been a seeing few a reflection. Of these things.
Yeah, there's right? been a few of these things recently where it's like the timeliness of this is almost scary because you're like, wow, that's what's happening.
I'd say this one, exactly this one, or even the recently sadly canceled Penny Dreadful City of Angels, which was set in like the 40s, which had a lot of similar themes. This one, even when we talk up later on about Lovecraft Country, like, come on, everything.
Yeah.
Well, that's just indicative of how pervasive these systemic social ills have been ever since. It's crazy. I mean, I'd make a little comment about one of the themes that's touched on in the trial of Chicago 7 is how bogus like these publicized trials can be and how politically motivated and how they're just put on as a show without actually taking into consideration like the real issue. And here it was anti-Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. But instead of focusing on that, it was really just trying to find a scapegoat for the government for the fact that their own police force started the riots and caused untold violence and injury on civilians. They were just trying to put these seven people on trial for that when they weren't addressing the problem why these people were protesting in the first place. And this, aside from like the riots and the racism, the whole bogus trial thing for me was very significant because we recently had an issue in the Philippines where one of the leading broadcasting networks was shut down by this current administration because the administration can't handle criticism. So they really found like a lot of stupid loopholes. And they staged like these hearings for a few months. And since we were on quarantine, there was nothing else to watch on TV. We were following this thing pretty closely. And like, it was ridiculous. And that's why I said there's nothing really fictional about a film like The Trial of Chicago 7, even if they dramatize a few parts or they ramp up the script or the performances, because I've literally seen something like this play out in the last few months. So it's disturbing. But yeah, that's why I don't know now if the film in itself is effective because of what it is or because of what it evokes. Like, had it come out at a different time, I don't know if it would have hit this hard, but they're lucky, I guess, with the timing of it, because now it's hitting everyone hard. And they have a great cast, and it was really written, brilliantly written, and the end was pretty powerful also. Because when Eddie Redmayne's character, who's supposed to speak on behalf of all the seven, was supposed to give his final statement, and the judge was saying, you know, if you make this, if you play your cards right, the government might look favorably on you or whatever. And he goes and he just like does the biggest F you to them by going, in the course of this trial, so like 5,000 of our soldiers have died in Vietnam, and I am going to read each and every one of their names.
Oh, boom. My God. Nice.
And that was it. So it's disturbing, it's chilling, and it's topical, but not at all relaxing or escapist, but I think it's probably an important film to watch these days if you're trying not to be, if you can handle it and you don't want to add to your like COVID depression, but it's powerful. There,
we didn't have it on the schedule, but really quick, because I know you said you watched it, Tatiana, since you mentioned Borat because of Sacha Baron Cohen being in the movie. I wanted to ask, what did you think of it, Borat 2?
I thought it was surprisingly good.
Really? I love how you're like, it was good.
Exactly. Your I was face. Like, why is this happening? But I knew that he wanted, it was one of those, because I think a lot of people have been saying this, but he really wanted it out before the election.
Yes.
And it is definitely about like, why you should not vote Trump. Otherwise, you're a fucking idiot, and you're gonna, like, die.
Sadly, there's a lot of those.
Yeah, but they did it. It was very funny. I watched it with my roommate, and I had already heard, like, good reviews of it. In terms of, like, I saw people tweeting that it was good, and my friend Amber was watching it, like, the night before. Two of my friends actually watched it the night before, and they said it was really funny, and it actually was good. So I was like, okay, I'm sure it's gonna be, you know, good enough. So I watched it with Katie, and my friend, or my roommate Katie, she does not pay attention to, like, she has the no attention span whatsoever. So, like, we could be 5 minutes into something, and she will already have forgotten what it's about, or she'll forget, like, who the characters are, or whatever, and ask you questions.
No.
But with this, she was, like, laughing the whole time, and she, like, remembered, like, even when I would ask, I would be the one asking, like, oh, what just happened here? She'd be like, oh, don't you remember this, this, and this? So, like, it was obviously engaging enough to keep her engaged, which is saying something. And also, like, I know, I don't actually know if it's, like, mockumentary style, like, everything's scripted, and they just have these randos as, you know, like, acting as those characters, or if they really did just go into, like, effects. You know, like, go into, like, a FedEx and have this person who is, you know, fax them things to Kazakhstan. I don't actually know how it worked out. I think that it is more of the latter because they don't, like, credit the randos, right? They just credit the people who are actually acting. But maybe it is. I don't know. But either way, it really did feel like they just put a camera there and said, hey, we're just filming this for fun or whatever, so just react how you're supposed to react. And then you get to see these people's reactions, which is really, some of them are deeply concerning. Like, there was, they went to the cosmetic surgeon, like a plastic surgeon, to talk about how they need to get her bigger boobs so that she can seduce, well, they didn't say Michael Pence, but it was bigger boobs so she could seduce Michael Pence or Rudy Giuliani or whoever it was. And the cosmetic surgeon, even though she's 15, you know, she was like, well, would you want to have sex with me? And then he was like, well, if your father wasn't here.
Oh my God. Like,
what? What is happening? How could you say that?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. And there was a doctor, a doctor, an obstetrician, he was like a preacher. He was some kind of like Christian group for like crisis, for pregnancy crisis or like women in crisis or whatever kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously they're anti-abortion. And so she went in with, you know, Borat, her daughter, the daughter of Borat went in, and we're like, oh, we need to get this baby out of me. And it was literally because she swallowed like a little baby on a cupcake, you know? She's like, we need to get this baby out of me. And then the guy was like, oh no, we can't do that. That's bad. Don't do that. He was like, well, I'm the one that put it in her. Because he's the one that fed her the cupcake, right? So wait, basically they had the whole conversation like the father had raped the daughter. And that's why they abort the baby. And the fucking priest man was like, well, you know, everything happens for a reason. God wanted this. So like, it's, you know, whatever. And I was like, how is this happening?
That's so awful.
Yeah, it was awful, but also, you know, it was awful in a very funny way. So good job with walking that line. And the girl that plays the daughter was really, really good. And most of her lines are in, you know, fake Kazakh language, which I'm sure they didn't actually bother to make a real language. So either she's speaking just like her natural, you know, tongue. And so then people in Russia or Uzbekistan or wherever she's from, I don't remember, I'm sorry, will know what she's saying. Or they just literally, let's talk gibberish. And she does, and she talks gibberish very well. So good job, her.
I have actually seen people who claim to not care and not be Republican try and say that Giuliani was just tugging his shirt in.
He was tucking his shirt in. That is correct. But everything else, like, he was being creepy. He was, like, you know, being very flirtatious with her, and, like, you know, she would, like, touch his leg, and he would be into that. So it wasn't, like, obviously he wasn't actually gonna, like, he knows the cameras were there, and he was supposed to be in an interview, so it wasn't like he was actually gonna try to have sex with her or something, of course. But you definitely see him being a creeper up to the point that, you know, her dad comes in to rescue her, so.
It is
quite like, okay. There are some things that are just like, how could this have happened, and then we not have heard about it until the movie? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just under wrap. This is crazy. Especially things with, like, top, you know, with top Republicans or whatever. But, oh my God, the scene where they get to, where they decide on Rudy Giuliani as who she's going to seduce is so funny, because it was just like, well, I mean, if we can't do Michael Pence, what if we do this friend of Trump's or this friend? He's like, no, he's in jail. No, he's been arrested. No, he's like, whatever.
He's in jail. Exactly. Oh, he was murdered.
Exactly. Until they finally got to Rudy Giuliani. And I was like, this is so correct. This is just correct. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my review of and also of course it is like, you know, there is like a plot outside of that, which is like Borat realizing that his daughter is a person. And that it should be just as valuable as a son to him. So, and that was, you know, like a little bit cheesy, obviously, but well done. It did make me, I was like, oh, emo times. And I'm assuming, I don't actually know, but the character that basically makes him come to that realization is like the random babysitter that he got for her, who first is to teach her that, you know, your vagine is not going to eat you if you touch it. But then later on, is the one that like makes him realize, like, you know, like, don't you feel bad that your baby is about to go, you know, bone an 80-year-old man? Don't you want to do something about that? I don't know if she's an actress or not. I don't know if they just got her and they were like, hey, say some lines or not, but she was great. So there you go.
Yeah, it's funny. I barely remember the first one. So, and I don't remember if I liked it or not.
I don't know. I think the first one, because I also don't really remember it. I feel like it was literally just a bunch of like Saturday Night Live type skits, right?
Yeah.
With less of a,
something like that.
This one definitely has more of a story and it's more like cohesive than the first one was.
Okay.
So yeah. And I don't think you
Sacha Baron Cohen is just very busy this year, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. All right, we've got two more things to talk about. One of them, does horror that's not political count as an escape?
Maybe.
I think if it's not political, I think it should.
Right? Because does Bly the haunting Manor. Of Bly Manor count as an escape if you like that kind of thing? I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, not political. I don't know. What did you think of it, Tatiana? You said you watched it, right?
Yes, we're talking about Bly Manor right now?
We're just talking about Bly
Manor. Okay, so I'm not, first off, horror is, like, not really my genre.
Yeah.
Begin with. Yeah. So, everyone super, super loved Haunting of Hill House, and I totally acknowledge, like, it was good, but, like, it was, like, too scary / depressing for me. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, okay. So, in that sense, I think Bly Manor worked out better for me, because there were not very many horror scares. I was not very scared at any point. And
no,
also,
I really wasn't.
I think that it's a more satisfying conclusion in terms of, like, the characters mostly, you know, get to a place where you're okay with it, I would think. So I like that. I think that in terms of like me getting attached to the characters and me rooting for them and then that working out or not, I like that for Bly Manor. That was good. But it took so long to ramp up. I feel like it was like up until like episode 5. Episode 5 was really the turning point. Yeah. And that was a great episode. And then, you know, things like steamroll from there. And they have that one episode from like the backstory of Lady of the Lake, which I like that we got the backstory. I think that's good. I like to know what started the haunting point, you know, the haunting. But they were very much, it was very much like, we're going to tell you every single thing that happened so you can understand everything. It's like, I don't need to know everything.
It was exposition dump the episode.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that that's kind of like, I also like how everything, you know, you go back and see different moments from another perspective, so you understand everything. That was cool, but it definitely was very much like they laid the groundwork a little thick before they went in. It was not necessary. Also, everyone talks so weird. That was like the big thing to get over for me. Like,
you know what's the funniest thing? When it started with Carla Gugino doing her bad, well, it wasn't that bad, British accent.
But yeah, it was still like, you know, that's not how she talks. So you're like, I literally just saw her.
I told Matt, I was like, bad British accents, ahoy. But then what's funny is most of the British people I know agree that the worst British accent is actually the guy who's British, but doing a different British accent.
The one, yes! The guy Peter, right? Peter Quinn.
Yes.
His accent was so bad. I was like, what is happening? This is so awkward. And there's no like story reason for him to have that particular British accent, I don't think. Like,
no,
he could
need to be Scottish. He didn't need to be Scottish. There's no reason for.
He could be a poor boy from whatever, wherever he's actually from. Yeah. He had to be Scottish.
Yeah.
And also, Dani, I like her a lot as an actress, and I like the character of Dani and her story. Yeah. And also, yay, lesbians. But women who love women, you know, maybe she's bisexual. But, so I really like her character and everything about her. But we just saw her in You, right, as Love. And she was great in that, and her voice was a normal voice. Like, she has a little bit of a quirky voice, but it's normal. It's in the normal range. And then here in Bly Manor, I was like, why is she talking like that? I don't know. She sounded like she, like, came out of the 1940s. And she was like, hello, I have come to film a movie now. I was like, please stop. I don't
know. Yeah, but, it was a bit weird.
Yeah.
It's funny, because we didn't somehow realize that it was based on the Henry James story. So we actually watched the Turn of the Screw. The one with Dan Stevens and Michelle Dockery before they did Downton Abbey.
Oh.
We watched it like 2 or 3 weeks before. Mm-hmm. So we were like, as soon as it started, we're like, wait a minute, we know this story.
Right? That's so funny. I mean, that actually happened to me too. Not that I had recently watched it, but I didn't know it was based on Turn of the Screw. And then as I was watching, I was like, wait a second, is this Turn of the Screw? and then, yes, I looked it up and it was.
And it's funny because it's like, I didn't think that adaptation, the Dan Stevens, Michelle Dockery one, was perfect. Like, there were a lot of problems with it. It was a bit too rushed and some things just didn't feel cohesive. But at the same time, somehow that setting and still the way that the period setting of when the story was supposed to be anyway, and it helped make it more haunting. Mm. And, I think having just seen that didn't help with my interpretation, like my watching this, because I was judging it the whole time, being like, I think the other one
was not like that one. Yeah, that makes
sense. Yeah. Although I do appreciate that it was not the uncle that she falls in love with, because that was just weird. Because that didn't make any sense, except that I guess. But
no, that would be really weird.
It. Because that's obviously the story in the Turn of the Screw, and it was just odd. I like that they brought more of Henry James' stories into it for Bly Manor to kind of flesh out the story, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. Some of them are a little too weird. But mostly, it took till episode 5 to really get going, and then it did for a few episodes, and then it lost steam again. And I'm still not clear, like, okay, why did the little old guy who was supposed to be Raoul Coley, why is he shorter than Raoul Coley? I was like, are we just supposed to get that, like, they're inspired, it's not the same person, but they're inspired by those people? Is that what it's supposed to be? Because I was like, why did he shrink? I don't understand. I think that's what it was supposed to be, but I don't know. And it didn't scare me very much at all. There was something else I was going to say that I, like, felt a lot, and then I just totally forgot what it was. Crap. It just kind of was. It wasn't very exciting. I think I like that they kind of got to wrap up the stories, but at the same time, it was almost too happy.
That's true.
I mean, a friend of mine said that she bawled at the end because, you know, she, like, especially the hand on the shoulder and, you know, like that. She was like, and I was like, wow, it didn't really get me at all.
Aww,
and
I definitely did bawl. I definitely bawled too, but I agree. It was too happy, but I like it that way, so I'm not going to complain.
It wasn't, I guess, the thing And I am not, so my best friend when I was a kid used to love horror films, and we had a, like, 99-cent video rental store across the street that would rent us horror films even when we were 10. So they just didn't care. So I used to watch horror films all the time because I just wanted to spend time with her. And even though I didn't really like them, like, I had bad nightmares and stuff. So I have a really hard time, like, I don't like horror, but I do at the same, like, Haunting at Hill House at least was a compelling enough story, as depressing as it was. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the characters had more of their own stories that helped a little bit too. And the way it was told, instead of just being like, hey, now we're going to give you this person's backstory. Like, it felt more natural in Haunting at Hill House than it did in Bly Manor.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. The thing I really did not like was that we gave Peter a tragic backstory to, like, what, say it's okay that he was a horrible person? Oh, apparently his father raped him and his mom let it happen. And so it's okay that he, you know, murdered people. And it's like, how? No?
Right. No, it's not okay. It's not okay. Yeah, he was definitely the worst character.
That really bothered me. Mm. So that was my biggest problem, I guess. The rest I was okay. I am glad that Danny and Jamie got at least some time together.
Right. I was mostly sad, like, Owen and Hannah. That was my heart.
That was
my heart.
You know what? It's funny with Hannah, because I told Matt, I was like, she's not eating. I was like, she doesn't eat ever or drink. And I almost said she's dead, and then I didn't say it. And then we got to that episode and he's like, is she dead? And I was like, fucking hell, I almost said it the first episode.
Yeah, you're like, I knew and it. I was right. I knew it.
Yeah. I did not call that it was literally right before Danny got there, but
Same. I wouldn't have called that. But yeah, I did, like, I was like, it's weird that she's not eating. She's definitely like dead or something, communing with spirits or whatever. And then there was, you know, the time with the crack, right? She saw a crack, and then when Jamie went to go fix it, the crack wasn't there.
Yeah. It was like, but yeah, I mean, it was good. It just wasn't as good as it could have been.
Yeah.
I feel like I do in some ways like this kind of horror, though, because I like the more haunting, spooky stories to an extent, as opposed to just, you know, Saw or something. I don't like that kind of horror at all.
Right.
Like I always say, I think one of the best horror films I've seen is actually the Dan Radcliffe Woman in Black.
Because
I just think it's so spooky. It's that Victorian horror. I think that's more compelling because it's more real. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like it could actually happen, as opposed to, like, and it's funny, whereas actually what could actually happen is probably somebody being fucking batshit crazy, like Saw. And actually, and I've always said that one of the worst horror films I've ever seen, because it fucked me up so much, was it's a Japanese called Audition. And literally, that could happen, and that's why it scares me so much. But I don't know, the ghost story, for some reason, those feel more spooky, because it's not real. It's just we have this idea of ghosts and stuff. And so, for some reason, you know, heck, I was 2 days ago working in my basement workshop, and there's a fucking, like, plastic tub on the ground, and I knew the plastic tub was on the ground, but every time I walked by, the light would shift, and it scared the shit out of me. Because I thought something was down there every single time. You'd think I'd just move the tub, but I couldn't because I didn't know where we put it. But anyway, yeah, I do like that part of it, but I just feel like it wasn't scary enough. If I'm going to watch scary, let's just go for it. Give me really scary. And I didn't feel like this was it. Jump scares aren't enough. I feel like that's all I got, really. But one thing that just concluded, so we're going to end now, last thing to talk about, that I absolutely loved, and it was kind of scary at times, because it is based on, you know, Lovecraft, and that kind of story is Lovecraft Country, which was amazing. Yes, I absolutely loved it. We watched, Matt has read the book, he's a big H.P. Lovecraft fan, so he had read this book before. And it's funny because we actually were talking about during the show at one point how it differs from the book Lovecraft Country. And then they refer to it by having Atticus actually get the Lovecraft Country book, and he talks about some of the changes. But anyway, that was just really, really good. And I'm kind of sad that it really is contained. Matt kept saying, there's no way this can go for more than one season. And I was like, maybe they'll find a way, but no, there's no way this is going to go for more than one season.
Yeah. Cause it's kind of like what I was saying with Queen's Gambit, right? There's a book. They did the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now we're done. Yeah. But yeah, it was super good. I think, again, like, I was really wary going into it because it's not my genre. I have never read an H.P. Lovecraft story in my life, and I never want to. But I also didn't know it was based on a book when I started watching. But as soon as we got to, like, past the... Because at first, the first episode, I was a little bit nervous because I was like, okay, it definitely feels like, yes, the real monsters are white supremacists and racists and bigots and whatever. You know, like, I get it. And now we're going to see just lots of horror being enacted upon our black heroes, and I hate that. But that was not the case, you know? Because it went from first, like, you know, monsters in the woods to the cult, right? And then they, when we escape the cult, they go to the haunted house. And suddenly it's like you realize that it's actually more like an anthology. And each episode is in its own way a different genre or a different, not genre, you know what I'm saying? Trope. Speak, Camille.
I agree with everything, of course. It does feel like it would work more as an anthology. And the times, at least after the first two episodes, which went like from 1 to 1,000 in like two episodes, I said, you have enough plot here for like a whole season. And you went for it. You just went in two episodes. I was like, okay. That was a lot. But the thing is, after the second episode, when they start to spread out for the rest of the other eight, I think it had a bit of an issue with balancing the serialized arc with the more like character focused arcs, because
for sure.
I think you'll agree that the best episodes are those like solo character episodes, like we can mention them later, but and then you would have like these characters having their own thing for one whole episode, and then in between you need, you know, the necessary serialized plot points that you need to seed in for the rest of the season. And sometimes, I mean, it's an interesting overall arc, don't get me wrong, but sometimes it would distract from like, oh, but there's a really fascinating character here that we're focusing on, can we just do that, right? But but I love how it's mostly a cast of people of color, also really driven by the female characters more than anything else.
Yes, I love that, and that's also something that they improved from the book, because a lot of the characters were either men or the women weren't involved. Like Letty wasn't part of the National Treasure Indiana Jones adventure.
Yeah.
And they added her in.
Yeah, and Christina is a man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which made episode 5 super interesting.
Yeah. True. I love Ruby so much. I love them all, but Ruby's one of my favorites. And that whole dynamic she had with Christina or William, whatever, was one of the most fascinating parts of the story for me. But like how, just the way that they wrote all the female characters as people, as humans, with motivations, characters that were nuanced, with flaws, with desires, with so many different layers to them. And even the male characters were also not written in typical annoying ways. Like Atticus is your chosen one trope, and yet he never feels, and I was never really annoyed with him as I usually am with these chosen one type characters, because he was fine. He's just dealing with so much, and I just felt like, oh my gosh, give this guy a break. He was in the war and everything, and he comes back and everything else is weird, but it is great. And sometimes I do feel like it might have worked better as an anthology, but then I guess they needed like a thread to hold the whole thing together. I don't know what you think.
I kind of want to read the book now. I mean, I know the ways that it's different, but I kind of want to see how the book is.
Same.
How it flows.
But I...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I agree with you, Camille, that I think that the weakest part is the through line. And I know it's the same through line from the book, so like they're following the story, but it still kind of was like, I don't really care. I don't think that we care. It's fine. But I think they did a really good job. They did so well of a job with the individual stories and tracking the character arcs that it's like worth it regardless.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's it's funny, I felt the same way. Like, I didn't really care about that story, except that what I did think was interesting was that you do end up with Christina as the main villain when she is the worst kind of white person, right? Where it's like,
yes,
I'm not racist, but I don't really care. But, like, I'm going to be nice to you. I'm not like, it's almost all the other white people were better in some ways, because at least they weren't hiding their racism.
Right. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm not racist, but I'm going to take advantage of a infrastructure that is stepping on you, right?
Yes.
I want to be the leader of that, with my not racist self.
Well, speaking of Christina, I found it weird that because there was a moment, like, in the later episodes where she was kind of called, well, Ruby called her out on why don't you care, and where she was actually killed and tortured in the same way as Emmett Till, right, and thrown into the lake and everything. I said, what was this moment for? Because there was no follow-through. I said, okay, so she experienced the death and lynching of a black child. So did she learn anything from it? Doesn't look like it. So what was that scene for? Like, it didn't seem to affect her in any way.
That scene was for the audience, not...
Yeah.
It exactly. wasn't for the character. That scene was, you couldn't show what actually happened to Emmett Till, but by doing it to a white woman who you know is not going to be hurt, it was a way of showing you this is the horror of the reality. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that...
Plus,
they tried to make it fit into the narrative, but at the same time, it wasn't for her. It was for us.
So it's kind of a waste for her as well, because that could have been a moment. Could have been a moment for her character. That
I mean, I the like most was it was for her character was to show that she really just doesn't care, and she is that, you know, as much as she tries to pretend or act like she doesn't, she isn't racist. She is 100% racist because she doesn't care. And it's, I mean, to an extent, she's not really even human, I guess, to it, because she doesn't care that another human being. Is it only that it was a little black boy, or is it just, no, she doesn't feel that pain, so she doesn't care about anybody? It almost goes further in a way. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I feel like the only complaint I had was that the ending felt kind of abrupt, that it's just, okay, he dies, yes, they beat her, and it's over.
Right.
But, it's like a checklist of.
I don't know what else they could have done, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, like, that's true, also.
That's really where it had to end, but it just felt kind of empty in a way.
Yeah. I think that's something that so many things struggle with. Like, even like the most classic of like literature or whatever, endings are just so hard.
That's true. That's fair.
I'm just like, this is not just taking me back. But it reminds me, like, whenever a Jane Austen novel ends, and I'm like, that's how it ends?
It's just the last few pages.
Yeah, exactly. And then.
Like, wait, what?
Exactly.
You were pacing it beautifully through the whole novel, and the last few pages, it's like, and then, okay, let's just dump all the loose ends right here and resolve them in, like, a few sentences. Jane.
Jane. So yeah, so I'm thinking that that's just like the same kind of concept too, you know, just like following along and then suddenly wait, and you don't notice that when it is a continued series, because when you can leave certain things open, right, it allows, I guess, maybe a slower development of the stuff you are wrapping up, but then you're like, God, I can't believe they didn't clean that up, you know, like now we got these cliffhangers, but.
That's why I do know people who won't watch certain things until they know how it ends, and so that you tell them, yes, it's going, because, like, I mean,
why invest your time?
Right? Yeah, exactly. You spend your time and you're like, that's what I got for it. It almost makes me terrified of, you know, like I was saying, Supernatural is finishing up right now, and I'm like, and I'm not even that invested in that show, but I have been watching it since the very first episode, and it's like, please don't get it wrong.
Right. Just remember, it's about the journey. It's about the journey.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen on The Walking Dead at this point?
Oh, God.
It's exhausting.
And can you even say anything for that journey? Did you get anything out of that journey?
I know. You can't even say it's about the journey. It was, but it's been such a long journey.
Why?
Right?
I will say about The Walking Dead and Lovecraft Country, though. I thought I would be immune to the gore, having suffered, having watched all 10,000 seasons of Walking Dead. But some of the gore in Lovecraft Country was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was not ready for that.
I was really surprised by, like, the beginning and just that first episode in general, because I was like, wow, they're not, like, having known nothing about the book, I was like, they're not shying from this. They're just like, here's monsters, go.
Exactly. No, like, okay. Yeah.
No. All right. And then it was because, yes, they're not, like, the monsters aren't even that bad in the end. Because no,
it's
monsters.
Really the racists.
Yeah,
really, the racists are worse than anything else here.
Isn't this is Watchmen did the Tulsa?
Yeah,
yes,
the Tulsa massacre, right? Too. Yeah. So HBO is like really like, no, you need to know this history.
Yeah,
or at least their shows are. Yeah. I mean, which is good. Because I will admit, it's something I didn't know about until Watchmen.
Right.
Which is awful. Which,
Watchmen and Lovecraft Country, it's like, whoa, I cannot believe this was a thing that happened.
They're actually doing archaeology right now and recovering some of the remains. So, which is good. Hopefully they can get, like, proper burials. But, yeah, I think Lovecraft Country is the only thing I've been watching, like, regular recently, because there isn't really anything else. And it was kind of nice to have something structured, and we enjoyed it. I would recommend it to people.
Same.
And especially seeing it through the end, I'm really, really hope that Jonathan Majors as King rumor is true, because he's great. So I really want to see.
He is great. That would be awesome. You go, sir.
Yeah,
Jonathan Majors.
You know, because we were talking about it, I'm trying to think. I'm like, what shows actually had really good endings?
That's true.
Everything's not a disappointment. It's like almost everything's a disappointment, right?
Right.
I've talked about Life on Mars, because I think that was a good ending.
Okay. Life on Mars.
As long as they don't pick up, you know, and do like a sequel. Which is,
but they've talked need that, about it, which I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Be strong.
As much as I would totally watch it, I'm like, no.
Right.
Idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to think about that. Maybe next time we can actually be like, okay, these are things. All I can think is things people told me were terrible endings. So I won't watch, like, Dexter, which is now getting,
maybe a better,
this miniseries will fix what everybody said was so terrible about that ending. I hear Breaking Bad. I mean, everybody loved that. And that was
supposed to was. Yeah,
that's pretty solid, yeah.
Yeah.
But I still haven't watched that.
I have hopes for a Better Call Saul, because they have one more season. I'm like, it's been solid so far.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Mad Men was okay. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
Fine.
It was all right.
Meh, meh. Yeah. Even Once Upon a Time ended, like, meh. But then, you know, at that point, it was like, at least you just end it.
At least it's over.
Yeah. No, Lovecraft Country was good, though. And I want everyone in that cast to get more opportunities. After,
yes.
So
I want to see them all in things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to spin off with just all the ladies just doing stuff.
Yes.
Right.
Being awesome.
Yeah.
I was sad.
Hippolyta's adventures in space.
Yeah. I was really sad when it turned out that Ruby was dead. I was like, I figured it out a split second before. I was like, oh my god, it's not
her.
Yeah,
I love Ruby.
And I was like, she kills her. I was like, no. I was way more upset about that than Atticus. Probably because I was expecting Atticus.
Everyone's expecting Atticus.
I was like,
too.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
Ruby is played by Wunmi Musaku, who's a British actress. And before this, I'm so happy for her that she got this really meaty role, really fascinating character. Because I've seen her she's usually in like a British detective show, like Luther, where she was like the assistant detective in Vera. And now you can see that she can do so much more, and she can sing. So
yeah,
oh god,
go girl!
Voice,
we need more of that. Plus, like a plus size. Really beautiful, sexy lady who was.
She had the best
portrayed, portrayed as gorgeous by the narrative. Like, and everyone, nobody was fat shaming her or anything. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of them had different body types, also, which I appreciated. And all of them were portrayed as beautiful, which is kind of like, why do we have to wait for a sort of horror fantasy period series to just portray women in different body types as beautiful. But yeah, that. Thanks, Lovecraft Country.
Yep. I like it. I want more. They could, I guess they could try and find a way to make, you know, just going with like the Lovecraft idea, make some other kind of story to make it an anthology thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could totally see them doing it. Just that using Lovecraft in general, like with any ideas with monsters, there's totally more stories you could tell.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not in,
That'd be cool.
There's a lot more racism to tackle. So.
Yep. Yeah. That's for damn sure. Anyway, all right. I think that's where we wrap up for the week. Yay. Thank you for joining us. As always, you can find more news reviews and someday when things are happening again, maybe interviews.
Right.
withanaccent.com. Follow us at With an Accent on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and With an Accent TV on YouTube. And the podcast is at Pop a la Carte Pod on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.